Chapter 10. The Fall of the Taliban and the Flight to Tora Bora. Bin Laden disastrously misjudged the American response to the 9/11 attacks, which he believed would be one of two strategies: an eventual retreat from the Middle East along the lines of the U.S. pullout from Somalia in 1993, or a full-scale American ground invasion of Afghanistan similar to the Soviet invasion of 1979, which would then allow the Taliban and al-Qaeda to fight a classic guerrilla war. Neither of these two scenarios happened. The U.S. campaign against the Taliban was conducted with massive U.S. air power, tens of thousands of Northern Alliance forces, and no more than 300 U.S. Special Forces soldiers on the ground. And al-Qaeda, which means the base in Arabic, subsequently lost the best base it ever had. 9/11 may have been a tactical victory for al-Qaeda, but it was a strategic disaster for the organization. Osama bin Laden. America is a great power, possessed of tremendous military might and a wide-ranging economy. But all this is built upon an unstable foundation which can be targeted with special attention to its obvious weak spots. A small group of young Islamic fighters managed to provide people with proof of the fact that it is possible to wage war upon and fight against a so-called great power. They managed to protect their religion better than the governments and peoples of the 50-odd countries of the Muslim world, because they used jihad as a means to defend their faith. Jamal Ismail, Abu Dhabi Television's correspondent in Pakistan in 2001. Next day morning after 9/11, I received the message from Osama. He did not claim responsibility. Someone came from Afghanistan. He said to me, "Jamal, I came last night in a hurry from Afghanistan." I said, "Okay, just give me one moment. Let me write whatever you are saying." He read it, and I edited it and typed it on the computer. I dispatched it through fax and read it on telephone for Abu Dhabi Television. In that message, Osama did not claim responsibility. He said, "We believe what happened in Washington and elsewhere against Americans, it was punishment from Almighty Allah, and they were good people who have done it. We agree with them." And Osama never praised anyone who is non-Muslim. From this, I determined he knows something and he's confident of their identity. They have links. When the second plane hit the Trade Center, I knew it was al-Qaeda. No other group had both the intention and capability of attacking the United States. I was sure that there was going to be a major al-Qaeda attack against American targets sometime that summer, but I could not conceive that it would be in the United States itself. But as the second plane hit, I remembered that one of bin Laden's men, Ihab Ali, had trained in the U.S. as a pilot in the 90s, and bin Laden himself had arranged for the purchase of a jet in Arizona in 1993. Jamal Khashoggi, the Saudi journalist who covered bin Laden in the mid-1980s. "I was in my office in Arab News in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. I was thinking of Osama at that time. I was thinking of him, no doubt about it. 2 days later, I wrote an article about 9/11, and I said, 'May God help us. The Americans will come out from their wounds, but we will have a problem to last us some time.' And I think I'm right." Paulo José de Almeida Santos, the Portuguese convert to Islam, was an early al-Qaeda recruit who met bin Laden on a number of occasions in Pakistan in 1990 and 1991. "The Quran and Islam expressly forbid the death of women, children, and old people. What leaves a rather bitter taste in my mouth was that planes were used on which there were innocent people and perhaps even children. I believe it was a strategic mistake to attack the towers of the World Trade Center. If they had attacked Langley, it might have been more intelligent. Langley is the CIA base. It would be a legitimate act of war. In the towers, people of many, many nationalities died, many of them neutral. When we were in Afghanistan in the 1990 period, Our objective was to create an Islamic state, a caliphate, a Muslim community modeled on the first days of Islam. This objective has in recent years changed. At present, the objective seems to me to be to wage war on the United States. I do not believe that we have the possibility of successfully going to war against the United States. As regard the towers, I continue to believe it was a mistake. But if it had been the Pentagon or Langley, I could give my support. Brian Fifield Shaler, Bin Laden's former English teacher in Saudi Arabia. When his face and those very soulful eyes again appeared as the backdrop of the news commentaries on September 11th, I will say that there is something amiss here because the student I knew was not a fanatic at that age, so something has happened between the time I knew him and the time of these hideous events. So that was my motivation in going public, to say that instead of just screaming, "Oh, what a monster this is, what an appalling person, and how terrible these fanatics and fundamentalists and so on are," I should say, "Hold on. There is a flesh and blood person behind all this. There is a very pleasant, charming, ordinary, not exceptional student. What is it that turned him from that into the person with the views he has today?" And of course I thought it might have been his experiences in Afghanistan. Bakarat Yani, the MBC bureau chief in Pakistan, had been told by al-Qaeda's leaders 10 weeks before that a big attack against American interests was in the works. His reaction follows. "I believed that al-Qaeda was behind 9/11. But on the 11th of September, and even 1 week after that in the Muslim world, you could not say that al-Qaeda did that. Otherwise you would be classified as someone who is working against the Muslims. Everybody was talking about Mossad, Israeli intelligence." Mossad Omar is a Yemeni held at Guantanamo Bay. Omar claims to have gone to Afghanistan to observe the situation under the Taliban after being recruited to do so by an acquaintance in Yemen. In extracts from his testimony before a U.S. military tribunal at Guantanamo, he recalls what it was like to be in al-Qaeda's camps around the time of the 9/11 attacks. "It was the first day of the events of 9/11. The people at the Farouk military training camp said, 'If anyone wanted to leave, we were free to leave. There might be problems and there might be bombings. So if you don't want any problems, just go. If you want to stay, then you can stay.' I did not want any problems, so I left because my objective was not to fight. I only saw Bin Laden once at that training camp, Al-Farouk. Bin Laden was visiting the training camp, and I saw Bin Laden from about 30 to 40 to 50 meters away. The second time I saw Bin Laden was in Khost, eastern Afghanistan. Bin Laden would pass through all the villages to see the people. It was 1 month before Kabul fell on November 12, 2001. I left the training camp on a regular truck from Al-Farouk to Kandahar. It was about a 2 or 3 hour ride. Then I completed the trip from Kandahar to Kabul on a civilian bus. 25 of my friends were in the same group. They were not Taliban. We didn't go through official roads. We went through the mountains. I was with a group of Arabs, Afghans, Pakistanis, and other people. We traveled from Khost to a place called Zermatt. After that, a place right on the border, a small village. That is how I got to Pakistan." Question from tribunal member. "Were any of the people who helped you fighters?" Omar. No. The people were just helpers. They were people who lived there. People who lived in one place would take us to the next place and go back home." Tribunal member. "Why would these people help you?" Omar. "They were Muslims." On September 21st, 2001... the Voice of America radio network interviewed Mullah Omar. Following pressure from the U.S. State Department, the interview was not aired. An excerpt follows. Interviewer. "So you won't give Osama bin Laden up?" Mullah Omar. "No, we cannot do that. If we did, it means we are not Muslims, that Islam is finished. If we were afraid of attack, we could have surrendered him the last time we were threatened and attacked, so America can hit us again." Abu Walid al-Misri, the Egyptian who had access to both the inner circles of al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Mullah Omar pronounced with his well-known openness, "I will not hand over a Muslim to an infidel." There is no doubt that this sentence conclusively decided the fate of the relationship between the United States and the Taliban. Moreover, it was the sentence that decided that war was inevitable. Rahimullah Yousafzai, one of Pakistan's leading journalists. He has interviewed both bin Laden and Mullah Omar. "I met Mullah Omar many times, both before and after 9/11. He told me, 'I will never deliver bin Laden. I believe God will help us.' He said he knew what would happen as a result. Others like Mutawakkil, the Taliban foreign minister, said that Mullah Omar did not understand the affairs of the world. Mullah Omar told me, 'I know I can't fight the Americans, but if God helps me, I will survive. I don't want to go down in history as someone who betrayed his guest. I am willing to give my life, my regime. Since we have given him refuge, I cannot throw him out now.'" Mullah Omar was a strong believer in dreams. He asked me, "Have you been to the White House?" I told him, "Yes, I was there once." Mullah Omar said, "My brother had a dream that there was a White House in flames. I don't know how to interpret this." The following are excerpts of bin Laden's interview with the Pakistani newspaper Ummat, published on September 28, 2001. Bin Laden states that U.S. government efforts to seize his financial resources following the 9/11 attacks are futile. "God opens up ways for those who work for him. Freezing of accounts will not make any difference for al-Qaeda or other jihad groups. Al-Qaeda has more than three alternative financial systems, which are all separate and totally independent from each other."
This ends Disc 11. The Osama bin Laden I Know. Disc 12.
One of the documents recovered on the computer purchased in Kabul by Wall Street Journal reporters after the fall of the Taliban was a letter from bin Laden to Mullah Omar dated October 3, 2001, 4 days before the U.S. bombing campaign against the Taliban started. In the letter, bin Laden states that the United States is on the verge of implosion. An edited excerpt follows. "Newspapers mentioned that a recent survey showed that 7 out of every 10 Americans suffered psychological problems following the attacks on New York and Washington. A U.S. campaign against Afghanistan will cause great long-term economic burdens on the United States, which will force America to resort to the former Soviet Union's only option, withdrawal from Afghanistan, disintegration, and contraction." Faraj Ismail, an Egyptian journalist who works for Marjala magazine, covered the Afghan jihad in the 90s and the war against the Taliban in the fall of 2001. "The first time I met Mullah Omar was in the war against the Russians. He was a friendly young man with only one eye. More religious than the others, he had studied at a religious institute in Kandahar. He speaks understandable Arabic. He also attended Abdullah Azam's lectures during the 80s. I interviewed Mullah Omar on 7 October 2001 in Kandahar. That night, the U.S. bombing began and I went back to Pakistan. I was very excited about the interview. Mullah Omar was not convinced that bin Laden was behind the 9/11 attacks. He said, 'I have control over Afghanistan. I'm sure he didn't do it.' Mullah Omar really didn't know what was going on in the world. Television and newspapers were prohibited by the Taliban." Majala magazine published Mullah Omar's interview with Faraj Ismail on October 14, 2001. An excerpt follows indicating that Mullah Omar, like many in the Muslim world at the time, had bought into the absurd conspiracy theory that the 9/11 attacks were a Zionist plot. Mullah Omar: "Neither Osama nor the Taliban has the resources to implement the recent incidents against the United States. I believe the perpetrators were from inside the United States itself. Ismail. How? Omar. For example, the investigation has not taken into account the absence on the same day of the incident of 4,000 Jews who worked in the World Trade Center Twin Towers in New York. As the U.S. bombing campaign against the Taliban began on October 7, 2001, bin Laden made a surprise appearance on TV networks around the world in a videotape which had likely been shot some time earlier. It was the first time he had been seen since the 9/11 attacks. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah and that Muhammad is his messenger. There is America, hit by God in one of its softest spots. Its greatest buildings were destroyed, thank God for that. There is America, full of fear from its north to its south, from its west to its east. Thank God for that. What America tastes now is something insignificant compared to what we have tasted for scores of years. Our nation, the Islamic world, has tasted this humiliation and this degradation for more than 80 years. When God blessed one of the groups of Islam on 9/11, they destroyed America. I pray to God to elevate their status and bless them. To America, I say only a few words to it and its people. I swear by God, who has elevated the skies without pillars, neither America nor the people who live in it will dream of security before we live it in Palestine, and not before all the infidel armies leave the land of Muhammad, peace be upon him. Hamid Mir, bin Laden's Pakistani biographer. On the night of 7th of October, after the launching of American attacks on Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden released a videotape statement through our Arab TV channel, and in that statement he praised the attacks. He said, "God gave courage to some Muslims who attacked the United States of America, and those Muslims will go to heaven." So you can find a big contradiction in the opinion of Osama bin Laden on the terrorist attacks and in the general opinion in Islamic countries. All the prominent Islamic clerics and Islamic religious leaders condemned the attacks. They declared that the attacks are un-Islamic. But Osama bin Laden praised those attacks. This is a big contradiction, and it proved that he is not a religious scholar. He is fighting the United States of America because he hates America. Whatever the reasons, Palestine, the presence of American troops in Saudi Arabia, but I don't think that his religious ideas are correct. Bin Laden watches TV, CNN, BBC. I have seen with my own eyes Osama bin Laden watching CNN. I'll tell you a very interesting thing. When I met him after 9/11, bin Laden said, "I was watching you on the Larry King show a few days ago, and you told Larry King that when Osama bin Laden talks on religion, he is not convincing. But when he talks on politics, he is very much convincing. So today I will convince you on some religious issues." So I said, "Okay, you watch Larry King show?" He said, "Yes, I am fighting a big war, and I have to monitor the activities of my enemy through these TV channels." And an interesting thing is that in those days, the Taliban government was intact, and Mullah Omar imposed a ban all over Afghanistan that nobody can watch TV. And bin Laden was violating the orders of Mullah Omar. The book written by Mr. Yosef Bodansky, Bin Laden, the Man Who Declared War on America, published in 1999, was lying in front of bin Laden. So during the interview, the book was not mentioned. After the interview, I said, "Mr. bin Laden, you are reading these kind of books these days?" So he laughed and said, "Yes, it is a very interesting book. If you read this book, you can find out many jokes in this book. And I think Mr. Yosef Bodansky is a great friend of mine. He is misguiding Americans about me. And if the Americans have this kind of information about me, then I am the happiest person on this earth." I was not ready to say that bin Laden is involved in the 9/11 attacks. You see, I was questioning the accusation that he is involved. When I visited Afghanistan, I spent some days there, I was totally changed because I saw the pictures of Atta, the lead hijacker, hanging in the Al-Qaeda hideouts. Privately, they admitted everything. They said they who attacked on 9/11 are our brothers. But they said that when the Americans kill Muslims in Sudan, they don't admit that we are responsible. When the Israelis kill Palestinians, they don't admit that we are responsible for the attacks. When the Indians kill Kashmiris, they don't admit that we have killed them. So now this is our turn. We have killed them, and we are not going to admit that. My tape recorder was on, and one very important Al-Qaeda leader, he turned off my tape recorder and said, "Yes, I did it. Okay. Now play your tape recorder." I played the tape recorder, and he said, "No, I'm not responsible." Bin Laden told me, "I became father of a girl after 9/11, and I gave her the name of Safia." I said, "Why Safia?" And he said, "I gave her the name of Safia, who killed a Jew spy in the days of Holy Prophet Muhammad, so that's why." I said, "What is the age of your daughter?" He said, "Just 1 month. She will kill enemies of Islam like Safia of the Prophet's time." He said to me about his little daughter. "So you are visualizing a one-month-old girl as Safia who should kill a lot of Jews. This is the mindset." Khaled Batarfi, Bin Laden's childhood friend, has remained in touch with Bin Laden's mother. After 9/11, she talked about how she followed the news desperately, looking for any clues of his well-being, and how when there was conflicting stories about his capture or his injury, she would feel sick. "There was a time when they said he was sick and has this kidney problem. From what I understood from his family, that he has something. He needs to drink water to reduce the salt in his body because he was affected by the yellow gas that the Russians used in chemical warfare against him during the 80s. He has to drink a lot of water." There has been considerable speculation about the state of Bin Laden's health and numerous reports that he suffers from life-threatening kidney disease. This is nonsense. While Bin Laden suffers from low blood pressure, and he sustained a foot wound in the war against the Soviets and a shoulder wound at the Battle of Tora Bora, it appears that he will not die of natural causes anytime soon, as the following accounts suggest. Abu Jandal, Bin Laden's chief bodyguard since 1998. "During my close association with him, I never noticed that he suffered from any illness except some acute inflammation of his vocal cords. This was caused by a chemical weapons attack that affected his throat during his jihad against the Soviet forces. This did not affect him much except whenever he spoke for a long time with those around him, he needed to drink a lot of water. So whenever he gave an interview to a journalist, he used to spend a whole day after that communicating only by gestures to preserve his ability to speak. Apart from this, the man was fit and in good health. I remember that he even used to ride in horse races with the young men for distances of up to 70 kilometers, 40 miles, without stopping. If he had suffered from an illness, he would not have been able to do that." Ahmed Zaidan of Al Jazeera interviewed Bin Laden 8 months before 9/11. "On Osama's health, I didn't see anything abnormal. I sat with him for 2-3 hours. There was nothing." Bakar Atyani of the Middle East Broadcasting Corporation met Bin Laden 3 months before 9/11. "I believe that Osama was putting on weight. He's in good health, and I don't believe that he was having any kidney problems. I don't believe it from his face, his health." Dr. Amer Aziz, a prominent Pakistani surgeon and Taliban sympathizer, encountered Bin Laden after the 9/11 attacks while he was traveling in Afghanistan in November 2001. He had previously met with Al-Qaeda's leader in 1999 when he treated him for an injury that he had sustained falling from a horse. "When I saw him last, he was in excellent health. He was walking. He was healthy. I didn't see any evidence of kidney disease. I didn't see any evidence of dialysis." The following interview between Al Jazeera correspondent Taysir Alooney and bin Laden took place in October 2001, the only television interview that al-Qaeda's leader has done since the 9/11 attacks. CNN aired the interview on February 5, 2002, after Al Jazeera chose not to air its interview for a number of reasons that have never made much sense, such as that it wasn't newsworthy. Key excerpts follow. Alooney: Dear viewers, welcome to this much-anticipated interview with the leader of the al-Qaeda organization, Sheikh Osama bin Laden. Sheikh, the question that's on the mind of many people around the world. America claims that it has convincing evidence of your collusion in the events in New York and Washington. What's your answer? Bin Laden: If inciting people to do that is terrorism, and if killing those who kill our sons is terrorism, then let history be witness that we are terrorists. Just as they're killing us, we have to kill them so that there will be a balance of terror. This is the first time the balance of terror has been close between the two parties, between Muslims and Americans in the modern age. The battle has moved to inside America. We will work to continue this battle, God permitting, until victory or until we meet God before that occurs. How about the killing of innocent civilians? Bin Laden: The killing of innocent civilians, as America and some intellectuals claim, is really very strange talk. When we kill their innocents, the entire world, from east to west, screams at us. Who said that our blood is not blood, but theirs is? Who made this pronouncement? Who has been getting killed in our countries for decades? More than 1 million children died in Iraq, and others are still dying. Why do we not hear someone screaming or condemning, or even someone's words of consolation or condolence? We kill civilian infidels in exchange for those of our children they kill. This is permissible in law and intellectually. The men that God helped on September 11th did not intend to kill babies. They intended to destroy the strongest military power in the world, to attack the Pentagon that houses more than 64,000 employees, a military center that houses the military intelligence. Question: How about the Twin Towers? Bin Laden: The towers are an economic power and not a children's school. Those that were there are men that supported the biggest economic power in the world. Question: What do you think of the so-called clash of civilizations? You always keep repeating crusaders and words like that all the time. Does that mean you support the clash of civilizations? Bin Laden: No doubt about that. The Jews and the Americans made up this call for peace in the world. The peace they're calling for is a big fairy tale. They're just drugging the Muslims as they lead them to slaughter. And the slaughter is still going on. If we defend ourselves, they call us terrorists. On October 19, 2001, 12 days after the U.S. bombing against the Taliban had begun, The News, a Pakistani daily, interviewed Jalaluddin Haqqani, the Taliban's military commander and a close ally of bin Laden's for more than a decade and a half. We will retreat to the mountains and begin a long guerrilla war to reclaim our pure land from the infidels and free our country again like we did against the Soviets. We are eagerly awaiting the American troops to land on our soil. The Americans are creatures of comfort. We have so far held to our defenses. There is no retreat anywhere. The military strikes have failed to inflict any serious or crippling damage. Mullah Omar, Osama bin Laden, and all other commanders are safe and sound and carrying out their duties. I can't tell you when I last met bin Laden. However, let me state clearly that bin Laden is not only safe and sound, he is also in good spirits. Kabul fell to the Northern Alliance on November 12, 2001. Peter Juvenal, who filmed bin Laden's interview with CNN in 1997, and had covered Afghanistan intensively since 1980, was probably the first Westerner to set foot in Kabul as it fell. Juvenal was working with the well-known BBC correspondent John Simpson, whom bin Laden had once threatened with death during the siege of Jalalabad in 1989. Peter Juvenal. I decided it might be nice to be nearer the front line. People had given me plans about the ground offensive. The first day they broke through at 11 o'clock at night. I was not with the lead group, but behind it. I bumped into some friends I knew from the jihad. All of them now were generals and senior commanders who just tend to sit on top of roofs and watch the battle go on. So they'd pointed me in the right direction. We were the lead element. We walked down the road, and there were more and more people coming out of Kabul. So that made great TV, and John Simpson did his piece. When someone asked him who was liberating Kabul, and because the Northern Alliance was up the road, he made this flippant remark that the BBC was liberating Kabul. The people were overjoyed to be relieved of such a suppressive regime. When the Taliban initially came, I think they were good, but they became a lot of crooks. For a lot of Afghans, the main thing was there was just no business. The economy was zero. It was going nowhere. You weren't free, you couldn't fly kites, play music, you had to go and pray at prayer time, you were restricted by the length of your beard, you couldn't wear Western clothes. I had one friend who was stopped at Kabul airport with a bottle of shaving lotion, and it was taken off him by the Taliban. He asked, "Why are you taking my shaving lotion?" They said, "Because you don't shave." He was going out of the country, he wasn't coming into the country. The problem about the Taliban, they were a lot of ignorant, uneducated people. They became more and more brutal, so people were really fed up. I worked in Kabul during the time of the Taliban. I wasn't around during the Second World War, living in Paris, but I got a feel of what it might be like with the Gestapo trying to find the French resistance and trying to control the city. It was very suppressive, very quiet, and I had to grow a beard just to blend in. So that all suddenly went.